This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. It's often said that what separates humans from animals is our unique capacity for language. A language experiment that began in 1967 has shown that chimpanzees can learn to communicate with each other and with people through American Sign Language. My guest Roger Fouts joined this experiment in 1967 as the tutor of the chimpanzee Washo. The experiment was started by Fouts' professors, but he later took it over, adding several other chimpanzees. Over the years, he's become concerned about the welfare of research animals, especially chimps. He's against keeping research chimps locked alone in cells. Fouts is now a professor of psychology at Central Washington University, where he co-directs with his wife the Chimpanzee and Human Communications Institute. It houses several research chimps, including Washo. It has a 3-story-high, open-air mesh roof that enables the chimps to swing above their living space as if it were a rainforest. The chimp Washo was born in Africa and was taken to America in the early days of the space program by scientists intending to launch chimps in space to test the conditions for humans. Washo never made it into space, but when that phase of NASA's research was over, two linguistic researchers, Alan and Beatrix Gardner, Fouts' professors, picked Washo out for their study. I asked Fouts what Washo's living conditions were like when he started teaching her.
Well, she was raised basically as a deaf human child. My professors, the gardeners who started the project, reasoned that Chomsky didn't make sense because very few of us speak in complete sentences, certainly. I mean, there are social utterances, yes, but not complete sentences. And also Skinner didn't make sense in that I know my parents never set me down and reinforced me to talk. I simply acquired it. But one thing they did know is that where language is acquired, and language is acquired in the enriched environment of the home, the social environment. And so they created that environment for Washo using a language that she was capable of producing. And that was a major, major change from the previous studies that all tried to teach chimps to talk vocally. Granted, they reared them in homes and treated them like children, but they were using the wrong language, the wrong modality at least.
So Washo was raised initially in the gardener's home?
Well, she had her own 8x24-foot trailer in their backyard, and I was hired on as one of the graduate students, and it was our job to be her human companions, to make her breakfast, to make her lunch, to change her diapers, to do her wash, to take her on outings, to, you know, watch her as she climbed the trees or play hide-and-seek with her and so on. So it was just like being a big brother.
Washo is the first chimpanzee to prove that humans aren't the only ones with the ability for language, and she has learned a lot of American Sign Language. What are some of the things you can communicate to Washo and to other chimpanzees that you work with?
Well, it's really quite amazing in terms of what they understand and what they demonstrate they understand. For example, one of our students... was pregnant. Her name is Cat Beach, and she lost her baby. She had a miscarriage, and she was gone for about a week. And she came back, and she apologized to Washo for not being there and explained that her baby had died. And when she told Washo this, who, by the way, had lost two of her own children, Washo signed Cry Me, which shows not only a comprehension but also the ability to empathize and to express that empathy. Which is, you know, we haven't bothered to ask the animals whether they have these things. We just assumed they weren't there.
And as you point out, a lot of researchers assumed that chimpanzees couldn't communicate with language, but they equated language with speech. And chimpanzees don't have the vocal mechanisms to speak, but they do have this conceptual skill for language, sign language.
Yes, exactly. In other words, again, if you will, a certain anthropocentric and egocentric version of ourselves, we asked our fellow apes if they could talk vocally, and it was like trying to teach a dog to fly. The chimpanzee vocalizations are controlled by their limbic system, the emotional centers of their brain, and we have that too. If I stepped on your toe, you wouldn't say, "My goodness, that hurts a great deal, I better let him know," by screaming. The scream just comes out. It's not voluntary. Whereas that's not true with their hands. And so by taking a humble approach, by beginning, my professors, Alan and Beatrice Gardner, basically said, "What are you about? We've got to understand your nature, and then how can we adjust to that? How can we meet your needs and take you on your terms rather than basically saying, prove my theory or don't tell me anything else at all?
One of the things you wanted to learn was whether signing was something that chimpanzees would do in the presence of humans, but if the humans were gone, you know, so was the interest in signing. And you found out that chimpanzees would teach sign language to their offspring?
Yes. Washo, as I said, she lost two babies, and then she adopted a 10-month-old, Lulus. And we stopped signing in his presence, except for seven signs, such as what, which, who, where, sign, name, and why. But other than that, we used vocal speech, which by that time Washo had a very good comprehension of. And what we found is that he did acquire the signs, and we actually saw some tutoring on her part where she would take his hand and mold it into a sign. Then we went one step further. Debbie, my colleague and wife for the past 33 years, instituted remote video recording where we put cameras in the chimp areas in their enclosures, or just outside their enclosures, I should say, and then videotape them with no humans present whatsoever. And this was basically a control for Lulus to make sure that it wasn't somehow a human effect. And so with humans completely removed, he still signed the signs that he acquired from Washo. And not only that, but we found that they had a great deal to talk about. In one of Debbie's 20-minute, she did 20-minute samples, three times a day, taking a sample from each hour of the day. And in one 20-minute sample, these were random, of course, there was 29 chimpanzee-to-chimpanzee conversations. Other 20-minute samples, they might be asleep or grooming or what have you, but they had a lot to talk about. And then out of that study, we found that not only do they converse with each other when we're not present, but they also talk to themselves. And that was very exciting because when we talk to ourselves, we're basically thinking aloud. And that gave us a window into chimpanzee thought, if you will, the first empirical evidence of what is going on in their head.
So tell me, what did the chimps talk to each other about?
Well, what we found is that it was primarily social. And the type of things that you talk about within a family, or at least a family with young children and so on. The two boys, Dar and Lulus, was primarily play, tickles and chase and so on. Of course, they'd get in an occasional fight. And Washo, a large part of her signing, we found had to do with the categories of reassurance, come hug, discipline, like you go, telling, you know, one of them to leave the room when she broke up a fight. And also what was interesting is that some of the people, again, that haven't bothered to read the literature have criticized and said, well, they only sign for reward. We found that food as a topic was very, very small. In fact, we looked at not only the remote video, but live observation. We looked at 5,600 instances of chimp-to-chimp conversation and found only 5% had anything to do with food. And generally, it was talking about food, such as you might discuss the merits of a cheesecake. But it showed us that the language that they're using, and I think like the language that we still do use, is primarily social. It's only in recent times, I think, that our species has begun to use it for problem solving and going to the moon and logic and so on. But language is a social behavior. Its primary purpose is the establishment of relationships. And if you stop and think about it, if you can't establish a relationship, if you can't communicate with somebody else, then from a Darwinian point of view, that means that you're not going to breed, you'll never get a date, and you're out of the game. And then in a species like ours, or the chimpanzees, where not only do we have to get together to breed, but we have a very, very long childhood, then that relationship and that communication and that language becomes even more critical. Because if mother and child can't form a relationship, baby won't survive.
Roger Fouts is my guest. He's the author of Next of Kin, What Chimpanzees Have Taught Me About Who We Are. And for over 30 years, he's worked with Washo, who is the first chimpanzee to actually learn language, and the language in this case is American Sign Language. Are you categorically opposed to using chimpanzees for medical or biological research?
No, I mean, that would be silly, because we use humans for biomedical and medical research. And what I would say is that because they are next of kin, quite literally, because a chimpanzee and a human share 98.4% of their genetic material, that we should apply or attempt to apply the same standards that we would for humans. And in this case, because most of them can't sign a permit, then I would make it even more appropriate in that it would be comparable to using human children who could not say yay or nay, but you could certainly have a guardian who could see what was best for the individual and approve of it.
How did you get as involved with protecting chimpanzees as with studying them?
Well, the black and white college dichotomy between myself and my fellow animals, Woisho turned that gray very, very rapidly. And I realized that she's a person, she had the same feelings. In other words, she was literally like a member of the family. And this is not, you know, emotion. This is also objective observation.
Well, she's not a person, she's a chimpanzee.
Well, she has a personality. So in that sense, I would say, you know, what I would define a person as is somebody with a personality. Now, if you say a human person, yes, she would be a chimpanzee person. That would recognize the species difference, just as we are human people, and there are chimpanzee people.
Wait a second. I just want to question your logic here. I mean, cats and dogs have clear personalities, but we don't call them cat people and dog people.
Maybe we should.
Uh-huh. Well, I mean, they could have personalities without being us. Right?
Yes, yes. In other words, a personality would denote a person, an individual. The alternative, the old model, basically said you're being anthropomorphic if you're applying these special words and characteristics. And they said what you should do is apply the words or descriptions that we use with a chair or a toaster. Quite literally, I mean, we weren't supposed to apply anything that was human to our fellow animals. And if you will, it seems to me that, I call that approach, rather than anthropomorphism, as they call the other, I call that mechanomorphism. It's attributing, or it's making animals seem to be more similar to machines, which is an old Cartesian notion, than they are to their fellow animals and ourselves. I mean, we are an animal. And in our animal world, there are persons. Why can't there be persons in the chimpanzee animal world or in the dog animal world? I don't see how you could define person in such a fashion that it would exclude our fellow animals.
Well, I can. I mean, because I think it's just like linguistics here in a way. I mean, there's a difference between a dog and a cat, and there's a difference between a person and a dog. And they all share certain similar characteristics like personality. But just because we use the letters P-E-R-S-O-N and the word personality doesn't mean that we're all human. I mean...
But we're a human and they're a dog. And,
right.
But we're, as a human, we also recognize that we have an individual being about us, which we refer to as person. And I think we should certainly recognize that individual beingness with them as well. In other words, human, we use that as a noun, I think, much too often, when actually we are human beings. And human is really an adjective that describes the nature of our beingness. Chimpanzees should be seen in the same fashion, chimpanzee beings. And it's really our beingness in both cases. I think that's more important than the particular adjective that describes that.
My guest is Roger Fouts, author of the new book, Next of Kin, What Chimpanzees Have Taught Me About Who We Are. More after a break. This is Fresh Air. Back with Roger Fouts, he spent 30 years studying the language abilities of chimpanzees by teaching them American Sign Language. The chimpanzees that you work with are now living in a nice sanctuary, I guess is a good word. It has, you know, a lot of grassy area and a lot of vertical space so that they can climb and swing. Do you still do research with them?
Yes, we do an unusual type. Unfortunately, it's unusual. I wish more people would do this. It's called a subject-paced research. In other words, if what you would have to do if you were a researcher in our building, you would have to design something based on what the chimpanzees tell you they like doing. And if the chimps don't want to participate, they don't have to. In other words, the arrogance of science where we force animals to do things that we want them to do rather than they is not really accepted, which means you have to know your individual and the species well enough to devise a task that they want to do it. And there's individual variation. For example, one of our students looked at semantic range, asked the very simple question, when does a chimpanzee think a cookie become a cracker? And she established this, Jen Boucher was her name, she established this using Oreos, which all the chimps definitely agreed were cookies, and saltine crackers, which they all definitely agreed were crackers. And then she came up with a special recipe where you could have salt salty and gooey, as well as dry and salty, and also, you know, dry and sweet, as well as gooey and sweet, sort of a salt sweet continuum and a gooey dry continuum.
I think I see where you're leading. Okay. The chimpanzees love this because they could eat all the stuff.
Well, right? The minute Tatu realized that the Orioles were gone, she was out of there. She said, "I have no time for this. Where are the Orioles? I don't like the stuff that you're cooking." But Dar, I think, I mean, he loved these so much that he would have been there forever. Now, Mary Radicke did another study trying to get to see if they would mimic hand configurations, in that sign language has certain letters, and so the chimps don't have them. And she wanted to see if they could have this capacity if they did a sort of an imitation game. Tatu loved correcting Mary, but Dar had no time for it. So as a result, one of those studies had Dar in it without Tatu, and the other study had Tatu without Dar. But the chimps decided which ones they wanted to participate in, not us.
When you started working with Washout, teaching her sign language, you were basically, you know, her buddy. You'd hang around and play together and do the laundry together and go places together. And now you have a completely different arrangement with the chimpanzees. They have their own sanctuary. And the people, you know, humans only go inside that sanctuary to clean it, mm-hmm. or to take care of the chimpanzees' medical problems. Other than that, you stay outside of it and communicate with them through the wire that what would you call it? The wire fence that holds them in. Why did you create that standard for yourself? I would imagine you'd miss even some of the physical contact with them. You know, some of the hugging and tickling.
Well, I do, but I was getting more benefit than they. When we would have to interact, I guess it would be comparable if someone said, "Oh, here's a young child. I want you to play football with him. He loves football, but I should tell you that this little boy is a hemophilic and he has brittle bone disease." I mean, you're going to have to be very, very careful, and that's what the chimps had to do us. We're basically defective chimps when it comes to interacting with chimps. And also, I mean, they needed each other. I mean, they do a much better job of grooming. You know, it's nice to be groomed by a chimp, but I usually end up bleeding. You know, I mean, they groom so, where I'm just a softy compared to them. And you know, their tickles. I mean, in terms of strength, I mean, there's no thing. But Washo's an adult now too. And in the morning, when we Debbie and I go in, and she gives us her blankets, and the other guys do too, she'll usually come over and give us a kiss through the wire. It's sort of a kiss good morning, and maybe sign come hug or something, and give us a kiss. And then she goes on about her day, and people say, "Well, don't you miss holding her?" You know, and she piggyback rides. Well, she's an adult now, and I point out to them that our 30-year-old son Josh, when we happen to see him during a holiday, I might get a quick hug at the airport, and that's it. He doesn't still sit in my lap. And so, if you will, they have moved into that adult world, and they aren't children anymore. And that's part of it, is respecting the fact that they grow up, and they're not these children that some people think they should be.
How do you do your language research with them if you can't go in there and interact with them?
Well, we look primarily at their communication, chimp-to-chimp communication, or, as I said, set up studies where they want to interact with us through the wire. Mary Lee Jensfeld looked at conversation and would start a conversation, and then she would put something in that was off topic and see how the chimps reacted to it. Mark Bodemer had another conversation one, and he would purposefully break it down, and he found that they would repair the conversation. For example, when his back was turned, how do you sign to somebody with their back? So what do the chimps do? They go... They make a noise, he turns around, they sign. Or if he said, "What?" they'd sign what they just signed again, except slower, and they might elongate the utterance, making sure he got it. Whereas if the conversation broke down when he said no, like if they said, "Yeah, give me some gum," he'd say no. And they'd say, "How about an apple," basically. And so they would change the topic, which again is continuing or repair. And so all of these things are naturally occurring. They're what going on and during the day regularly. And we're just putting them into, if you will, a scientific study and looking at them.
Do you envision a day when more and more chimpanzees have learned sign language and can communicate with it? I mean, do you think you've really started something here?
I hope not. I hope not. We know now. I mean, granted, we don't know all we could know, but we know enough to know what's going on. I hope to see a day when there's no chimpanzees in this country, period, and where we are spending our money to protect their communities in the wild, and so that they can be chimpanzees all the time. Because Washo, even in the great facility we have, can't be a complete chimpanzee.
Yeah, but maybe she likes her life, huh?
She does. She does. But what broke my heart was this last June, a year ago June, when we saw what it was like. We visited Gombe, and it was very exciting, but it was very poignant to know that, you know, whereas I was obviously a defective chimp, barely keeping up with the wild chimps there, good old chimps, Washo belonged there. Washo belonged there. She doesn't belong here. That's what evolution and all her ancestors were adapted for. And it's very, very poignant to realize that such a strong individual, this, you know, with tremendous self-esteem, what could have she given to her community had we left her where she belonged, where she was born with her people?
I've got one last question for you. When you built this wonderful sanctuary for the chimpanzees, did any of them sign thank you?
They signed hug love, and they were excited. When Washo woke up and looked out and saw the grassy area, she started screaming and saying come hug and wanted me to come over embraced. When they first went out, her first act, we have this on film, she comes down the stairs onto the grass, she goes over the wire, she reaches through the wire, Debbie's standing there, and she takes both of Debbie's cheeks in her two hands and pulls her forward and kisses her before she went out. And then she turned and just started running across this beautiful outdoor area, and she hadn't been out in 13 years. She appreciated it.
Oh. Well, Roger Fouts, thank you very much for talking with us.
Thank you for having me.
Roger Fouts is the author of Next of Kin. He directs the Chimpanzee and Human Communications Institute at Central Washington University.